if we look at some of the most marginalized in our community, trans people of color, lesbians, people that aren't part of privileged groups outside of the LGBT community tend to have greater disease burden across the spectrum, migraine disease, as well as others. So we really have to look at this as a health disparities discussion. And why is it that the most marginalized of us are experiencing worse health outcomes?
New studies show that more than 50% of people in the LGBTQ community experience migraine. What these studies do not show is why this group has such a high percentage of migraine. Do the stressors of life as LGBTQ contribute to this high percentage? Do practitioners have enough training to effectively diagnose and treat this community? How can patients effectively advocate for their care? Joe Koh from the Global Healthy Living Foundation is here to explore these questions and more about migraine and the LGBTQ community. Joe, welcome to the Migraine World Summit.
Thank you so much, Lisa, for having me. I'm delighted to talk about this issue with you today.
We are so excited to have you here. Reading the study that over 50% of people in this community suffer from migraine, that is even more than the percentage of women, which we generally think as the largest group. Why, in your opinion, do you think so many people in your community are suffering from migraine?
That's a really deep and complicated question, but if I was to boil it down to the most simple way of looking at it, it's because the world isn't fair. We face systemic oppression and discrimination, sometimes are rejected by our families because of who we are as LGBTQ people. So the increased stress and trauma that a lot of us in our community face, I would imagine, impacts migraine disease as well as multiple chronic illnesses in the LGBTQ community.
Yeah, the level of stress seems to make a lot of sense with the recent findings about chronic inflammation or just extra sensitivity to the brain system and brainstems of people with migraine. Specifically regarding migraine diagnosis and treatment in the LGBTQ community, what do you think are the greatest unmet needs?
I think we have to look at the LGBT community in its rich diversity. So we're not a monolith. I'm a gay white man that has a lot of access in this world. I am able to navigate health systems. I have an employer that understands my disease. If we look at some of the most marginalized in our community, trans people of color, lesbians, people that aren't part of privileged groups outside of the LGBT community tend to have greater disease burden across the spectrum, migraine disease, as well as others. So we really have to look at this as a health disparities discussion. And why is it that the most marginalized of us are experiencing worse health outcomes?
Do you think it's because of lack of access of care or lack of practitioners willing to serve these patients?
I would say it's both. I would say that patients are more comfortable seeing practitioners that look and feel and affirm their identity. So I know, doing this work in the neurology space, it's been really hard to find out practitioners who are neurologists or headache specialists. It's a hobby of mine to find those. And I bumped into many, not many, but a handful at conferences like the American Headache Society and some other things. So I think on the practitioner side, it's important for people to see that there are LGBTQ neurologists and primary care physicians and nurse practitioners. On the access side, migraine might not be the biggest concern for an LGBTQ patient. It might be if you're trans, getting your hormone treatment. It might be if you're HIV positive, making sure that you're getting your HIV medication. So we really need to look at the LGBT community as a whole and say, how are we going to, once folks come in the door for hormones or HIV medication or for other forms of LGBT affirming care at LGBT clinics, for example, how are we also talking to them about migraine? Are we bringing this up if we're hearing that they have headaches? Are we not brushing it off that it's quote unquote just stress and it's something that should be normative or normalized in our community. So I think it's a really important discussion. It's multifaceted, and we need a multifaceted approach to really solve the issue.
I love that you point out that you might actually have to be informing the patients, that physicians and nurses might actually have to be telling people what you're experiencing is this thing called migraine. It's not a headache, because in all communities, people are underdiagnosed.
It's like when a gay man goes to get PrEP, are we talking about migraine? Are we bringing that up as a society? And I could tell you, I haven't spoken about migraine when I've had those discussions with healthcare providers. So I think it's a challenge in our health system in general that we have such limited time and energy, that practitioners, that providers have such limited resources and bandwidth to have these really deep discussions with patients. And that's a whole other episode, Lisa, about the unfair practices of insurance companies and prior authorizations and all those things that delay our time with our providers. It blows my mind. So I think we have to look at this issue as part of a larger problem. It's around health disparities. It's around access. It's around how our medical system is created and who it's created for.
You mentioned trans patients might be coming in searching for hormone treatments. And many times for many people, hormone fluctuations can trigger attacks or be a main driver of migraine. So it does seem like an area that would be a good starting point for practitioners to maybe address this issue in clinical care.
Yeah, and I've heard anecdotally, I'm on the board of our LGBTQ center here in Rockland County, New York, and we fortunately are able to partner with a health system and co-manage or co-produce or co-create this health clinic for our community here. And I've heard from folks that work in that clinic, in that space, that there are studies and there's thought that if you bundle medication, so if a person is coming for hormones, something that affirms their identity, that they need to live, to survive, to feel like their whole self and truly who they are, if you are looking at other chronic diseases, you might not be managing your blood pressure because it's not top of mind. You might not be managing your migraine as much because it's not top of mind, but that thing that cuts at you, that cuts at your identity, people are going to do what they need to do to get their hormones. So we need to look at, when people are doing that, how are we talking to them about chronic disease like migraine? And are we having discussions around treatment? And I think the point that you bring up, Lisa, and I'm no expert here, there are so many smarter people on trans issues than I am. It's not my lived experience. I think that there is a lot that can be said there about affirming people's just lived experiences and seeing them as a person. And then I think that we can have these greater discussions around healthcare in general.
Tying into seeing people in the LGBTQ community as people, it seems like such a simple concept, but we know it's not easy for everyone to do. Do you think that this otherism keeps patients away from going to the doctor to seek any sort of medical treatment?
Oh, without a doubt. If you feel like you're going to be shamed or questioned about who you are as a person, you're not going to live that in dignity and seek care. We know that people are delaying treatment to routine wellness visits because their primary care physician isn't affirming of their identity or sexual orientation. So we really need to do a lot of work as a culture, as a society, to embrace the fact that lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer people are 100% fully human. We're your neighbors, we're your friends, we're the people that are doing good in this world. And you need to see us like that and not as some politicized other that's trying to do whatever the people that want to oppress us say we're doing, which really I don't understand, but it does keep us from getting the care that we need, because why deal with another form of discrimination?
Yeah, it sounds exhausting trying to get help from someone and then feel like you have to come in armed for battle just to defend your existence.
I hear so many stories of people that their partners aren't taken seriously if they're in a same-sex relationship, or that their identity isn't affirmed if they're trans or non-binary. And these are fundamental things that are so simple for us to do. Like, ask someone what their preferred pronouns are at a medical setting. And that changes just the feeling of the form when you're filling out that initial form, that, wow, I might not have to have this battle, so I could use my energy to get the care that I need to get. And we all know, living with chronic diseases, we have limited energy and bandwidth to deal with all of this stuff. So make it easier for folks. Be affirming, be uplifting. It's really not that hard to treat people with dignity and respect.
Do you think that people in the LGBTQ community are viewed by the medical system sometimes as people who experience less physical pain? Do you think some of that stigma goes into the treatment?
I wouldn't be able to say about that specifically, that comparison. I will say that unconscious bias definitely does play a role in how we get care as a community. And if you're not respected as a human being, then your pain or your issues aren't going to be respected. I don't think that's a big leap.
You said that you have not experienced as many difficulties as some other people in your community. Did you have a hard time finding treatment and care for your own migraine?
I definitely did. I didn't realize that I had a hard time finding treatment and care for migraine for many years until I started to do this work professionally and realized that I was settling when I shouldn't be. So I like to think of it as when we think of migraine as a culture, we think of it, and this is how I thought of it. I was like, it's a really bad headache. It knocks me out for a couple of days. I have to go in the dark. It's something that people in my family experience. It's a part of life. It's part of my existence. I am shocked to this day, although I know it's not the case, when people say they don't have a headache every day. I lived for so long with a headache every day. It wasn't a horrible headache. It was just a headache and just a headache. It was there. It was like white noise in the background, very muted for most days, unless it was a full-on migraine attack. And then those were the days that I would be really impacted. I didn't realize that I was settling for subpar treatment until I started to listen to professionals, hear the work of the Migraine World Summit, work at the Global Healthy Living Foundation, do all these things and encounter all these people that are like, there's all these other options out there. I thought it was just a headache. And I thought as a guy, and I think that that played more into the issues with me and delay in treatment. I thought it wasn't that bad. I don't really see myself in the migraine community. So I never was drawn to learning more. I never felt like it was a priority in my life. It was always something that was there, but not the primary thing. Discrimination in other aspects of my life as an LGBT person was very much there. So I dealt with that discrimination in my school, discrimination in my community, and all of those issues. But I didn't connect how that might be also feeding into the intensity of my migraine attacks. And it was why I was so excited when I heard the research of Dr. Nicole Rosendale, who did this study through a research network called the Pride Network. And it was called, and it's a long name. Researchers do amazing work, but sometimes really long things. It's migraine disability, trauma and discrimination in sexual and gender minority individuals. And she was one of the either the leading principal investigator or co-principal investigator. But I got to speak with her on my podcast, Talking Head Pain. And I was getting chills because I was like, wow, they're talking about how trauma impacts the LGBT community and migraine. And so many of us are traumatized by society. Either we're bullied in school, or our families are not supportive, or we're stressed that we're going to get fired from our job, or we think that the Supreme Court's going to overturn marriage equality. All of these issues contribute to a daily bombardment of our soul and our spirit. And that has to impact how we feel. And it's so refreshing that things that we know as a community, of course, heterosexism, homophobia, and transphobia is making us sick. But now we have researchers that are starting to say, yeah, it really is. And that validates the experience in a different way.
You brought up So many things I want to break down from that answer. So we started off by talking about how it took you a while to really accept that you were part of this community, the migraine community. And I know a lot of our viewers, myself included, felt the same way. This is a headache. I have it under control. So I love that you share that you felt this otherism. I think that we get so used to the daily pain that we forget how severe it really is, and therefore hold back on pushing for more treatment or pushing to see a specialist. Did you find that was kind of what happened with you?
Yeah, I kind of just settled. I was being treated by a really, my primary care physician, who's great, but he wasn't up to date on some of the newer medications because he's treating so many different things as a primary care physician. You can't expect them to be experts on everything. So I was doing okay with him. And I think what really helped me get to a place where I am now, where I'm much better managed, is that I said to myself, I'm worth the time and energy it's going to take to get to whatever I could try to get to. I don't know if it's going to be 100%, 95%, 80%, but I'm worth that battle, because I was at 60 or 70%. And I was okay with, you know, the passing grade at 70%. I was like, all right, I'm working, I'm getting through my life, I'm doing most of the things that I want to do. I didn't have this conversation with myself consciously, but this is in retrospect how I must have thought and came to this. I was doing okay. I was getting by. Now I'm doing so much better, and it's a passion of mine, and I know my organizations, to reach the people that are just getting by, because there are so many options now. It's really, really inspiring and hopeful that we have such great innovation. We have headache specialists. We have nurse practitioners who are specializing in headache medicine. We have primary care physicians who are doing that. We have patient advocacy groups that can support us.
He listed a wide variety of struggles that the LGBT community faces: prejudice at home, discrimination at school, worry about losing your job. And as you listed each one, I felt my own stress level raising, and I was just hearing about your experience. So it's truly interesting to have these studies confirm that this constant level of trauma and stress really is affecting you on a molecular level and not just an emotional stance. Do you feel that healthcare in terms of mental health and dealing with these stresses is a key to helping LGBTQ treat their migraine?
Mental health is a difficult topic. I'm a big believer that it's an art, and it's if we need better access to providers, we need insurance companies to cover it. We need people that are not going to do damage to our community, because mental health providers can come in with their own biases, and mental health historically hasn't been used positively towards us. You know, I can go into electroshock therapy and trying to rewire people's brains to not be gay through quote unquote mental health services.
So even this is a stressor, thinking, you know, I'm not in the LGBT community, and I think, oh, I can go see a therapist to help me manage my stress. And to you, you see that as another form of possible stress or damage.
Oh yeah. The first thing I think about when I'm interviewing therapists for myself, am I going to have to educate them on LGBT issues? Because if I am going to have to do that, that's not going to work out. And that might not be what I want to talk about, right? I could have that totally under control, and that's not what I want that therapeutic relationship to be. But unfortunately, if you have a clinician who isn't affirming or supportive of the LGBTQ community, it could do a lot of damage, a lot of damage. There have been therapists that have done a lot of damage to my community. There are also amazing therapists that help us get out of really difficult moments, that are doing amazing work. So I wouldn't paint a broad brushstroke and say it's what's going to work. It'll work if we have caring, empathetic, culturally competent, therapists that are able to address the multifaceted nature of our identities and how that may or may not impact our health.
So coming back to talking about treatment, specifically about migraine, how can people in the LGBT community ensure that they are not getting subpar care? How can they stand up for themselves in a doctor's office? How can they research care providers beforehand to be able to tell if it's a good fit for them?
So I'm very blunt. We'll never be able to ensure that we're not going to be mistreated by anyone. We could do things that can increase the likelihood that we might not be. But if we live in a culture that views us as less than, that we're, you know, having to debate our existence, we're worried, like I said, about the Supreme Court saying that we're second-class citizens. So we can't ensure that. We don't have the power to. What we do have the power to is to support each other, to share resources. If we know that there are providers that are affirming, you know, let people know that there are providers that are affirming. Look in your local community for LGBTQ centers and clinics. There are many, both just educational support centers that don't provide healthcare services and LGBTQ specific health clinics. The likelihood that you're going to get better care and resources from your local community who's on the ground, understanding who the providers are, is much greater. So make friends or reach out to those folks and look at where the national organizations are doing, the Human Rights Campaign, or if you're talking about mental health, the Trevor Project. Reach out to organizations that are doing the work on the ground.
How do you keep patients encouraged to keep finding a new physician, even after they've had multiple bad experiences?
You're worth the time and energy. You deserve to be respected by your healthcare provider. Full stop. That's hard for some of us to hear, that we deserve to be respected, because in many ways we're not. But we deserve that, and we deserve to feel better. And unfortunately, the world is still not where it needs to be. Like I said earlier, the most marginalized of us are dealing with the greatest burden of this. So we also need to support each other as a community, come together, understand that people are coming to us, if we're an organization, if you're a healthcare provider, with a lot of, for lack of a better word, baggage. And we have to unpack that, and we have to provide space for people to feel secure and safe enough to share some really deep, painful lived experiences in order to get to the place where we need to be.
I'm thinking of parents in the community raising children who might be coming against this struggle. I'm assuming your advice to these parents seeking care for their children is the same thing. Reach out to the local communities in your neighborhood to figure out who would be good providers. Do you have any other additional words of advice for parents who are working with children who have migraine and may be in the LGBTQ community?
Love your children.
Number one, love your children. Yeah, that's great advice.
It's simple, but so many of our parents don't. My parents did, but I know so many don't. And it's something that we take for granted, that feeling like you're part of a family, that could make a big difference. There are groups for parents, both locally and nationally. One group is called PFLAG, stands for Parents, Friends of Lesbian and Gays. Probably the name has evolved. And to be more inclusive, I know they do amazing trans work in local communities as well. And again, reach out to your local Pride and LGBTQ centers and find out where they recommend you to go as a parent. Understand that as a parent who isn't part of our community, you'll never experience our lived experience. And that's somewhat unique to this form of marginalization. Because the parents aren't going to be in the same position to say, I lived that, I experienced that, I know what it's like to be gay. My parents don't know what it's like to be gay. So I think that empathy but not trying to force it, I think is really important. And young people know when young people are feeling loved and respected in our homes, in schools, in communities, in religious settings. So it's really just making that environment as adults where we're saying we're not going to create an environment that is harming our LGBTQ youth.
I love that. I see so many parallels between, not to demean the experience of LGBTQ, but there's so many people in our friends and family and coworkers who don't understand migraine and they'll never fully experience what we go through. So imagining having to deal with both of these parts of your humanity be disbelieved or pushed aside, it's truly a struggle. It sounds like a real struggle.
I've always felt that chronic disease, LGBT issues, oppression, they're all rooted in the same thing. It's power dynamics. It's who's believed, who's respected. So that statement, Lisa, isn't that far off. I think that the invisible nature, a lot of times of both things, being LGBTQ, sometimes people know, sometimes they don't unless you tell them. Migraine, sometimes they might know, sometimes they won't unless you tell them. So I think that invisible nature, the stigma, I think there's a lot to be explored there.
This leads perfectly into my next question, which is, why is it so important for less visible groups impacted by migraine, such as men, LGBTQ, and BIPOC, to be represented within this community?
I think it will change if people get care or not. If people want to be part of something bigger than themselves, which can really create positive change individually. I think it's our responsibility to look at where we have control and power in our lives, in our organizations, in our institutions, to create that change and not just do it because it's the buzzword, do it because it's important and it's lifetime work. It's not something that we're going to solve in a year. It's not something that we're going to solve one initiative. It's something that we have to solve with intense culture change. And that starts at the top. And it starts with all of us when we have power to make that change. So I think that it's so important for folks like myself and others in my community to see and hear that there are LGBTQ people that are living this experience, that you're not alone, that your trauma, your pain, whatever you're feeling is real. And it's not okay. It's not fair. It's not right. And there are people that will work with you to fight that.
Representation matters. It always seems to come down to representation matters.
One thing about representation, it has to be real.
There is a lot of virtue signaling going on in the world right now, as opposed to true representation.
Oh, I so agree. And people know. People in the LGBT community know. People in the BIPOC community know. People that are marginalized know when an organization is doing the work and when an organization isn't doing the work and is saying they're doing the work. So I think it's important for all of us to do a lot of soul searching and say, where do we have the power to impact change to make it so that 50%, as you said, Lisa, in the beginning of this interview, of LGBTQ people that live with migraine are going to not have that be the reason why they're not getting treatment. Because we know, you know, I know that there's going to be a ton of other barriers for getting treatment and getting migraine disease under control. We can't make being lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender another one of them. It's just not acceptable in this day and age, in our country and in our world.
It sounds like a next great step for all of us. I'm thinking myself, what I can do more is provide more awareness to headache specialists and neurologists that this community is so large and that they need more help.
That's really appreciated. And it's what we can do. We have to boil the ocean, right? But how do we do that? By slowly increasing it. And you could put it up a little notch. I could put it up a little notch. And then we're making great change.
So lastly, I want to ask you, what is different for you now than 10 years ago when you think about your life with migraine?
Oh, wow. so much. I don't have a headache every day, which I didn't realize how big that was. I recently, in the past 3 years, probably 2 years, had this awakening when my brother was diagnosed with epilepsy. He was coming out of a seizure, and he was diagnosed old for epilepsy. He was in his 30s. I'm trying to think how old I am. He's 4 years younger than me. He was in his 30s. And so it was scary. We didn't know what was happening. And he was coming out of a seizure before he was managed well. And he looked at me and said, "Joe, I'm worried about you." And I was telling him at this point, "Jonathan, you need to get to a different neurologist. This person you're seeing isn't really helping you. Promise me you'll do this." Because as a man, it's like, I'm thinking, like, we don't take our health seriously. He's not going to push. His wife was pushing him. So he, in that moment of innocence, said, "I'm worried about your health." And I thought I was fine. I didn't really see how the trajectory of my health was going. And because of newer medications, and because I was able to get a healthcare team that included a cardiologist and a neurologist, you know, so I was able to see specialists prior, I was not. I am on different treatments that have enabled me to exercise more, to appreciate and enjoy life more. And what blows my mind is I didn't know what I was missing. And I think that's really what is hard for some folks. And this isn't everyone's experience, but we're so used to surviving. If we're LGBTQ, we're used to surviving. Like, how do we envision a world without heterosexism and homophobia? That's mind-blowing. As a migraine patient, how do we envision a world without migraine pain? That I didn't know was mind-blowing, but it was. And what are we missing? It's hard for people to grasp that because we're so used, we're able to understand when something's being taken away from us, we feel it. But what we might get by putting the energy and effort forward, that's a harder sell. So we need to really decide for ourselves where we want to be and is this okay? So I'm in such a different place. I have bad days. I had a bad day a couple days ago. And I made it a point to post it on social media because I post a lot of the good days, which I'm, you know, it's important to be positive and all the things that I'm doing and the exciting personal records that I'm achieving at the gym. But I had a really bad migraine attack the past weekend. And I said, you know what? I want people to see this because I don't want them to just think that, you know, everything is okay all the time, because we also, there's that concept of toxic positivity and we go in multiple directions. So I shared that and I got a lot of interesting feedback. I got a lot of advice, which I haven't gotten in a while, maybe because I haven't talked about migraine. I'm like,
yeah.
I don't need baking soda and vinegar. I don't want your essential oils.
I have a team of doctors. Thank you. I'm just sharing my experience.
But that's the other thing. And it has to do with allies too in the LGBT community. A lot of this comes from a well-intentioned place. These people that are sending me DMs are friends. They're not like, or acquaintances that are friendly. They're not like trying to be annoying. So I try to say, well, I'm glad that worked for you. I'm glad that the fish oil helped you. I'm glad that the baking soda helped your friend. That's how I respond to them. Because I do know a lot more about migraine than any of these people that are sending me these messages. And the same is true when we work with LGBTQ people. If we're not part of the community, we could do things that are well-intentioned. And it could be negative towards the person. And we have to provide the space for that person to be able to tell us, you know what, that's not really how I like to be identified. Or, you know, how you spoke to me about being gay isn't really the way that makes me feel good. Or, you know, how this form that I filled out isn't affirming of who I am. But we have to provide that space if we're in the position of power. So I think there's a lot of overlap between chronic invisible disease and oppression from various different identity groups.
I think it's really important that you are sharing the bad days, if only to illustrate that this is a disease without a cure, but it can be managed. And as our listeners just heard, it took years for you to find the right adjustment and the right number of doctors. So I always like to just reemphasize to everyone, keep trying. It can get better. Your first experience doesn't have to be your ending sentence of your treatment, because this is such an insidious disease that slowly, it's like you said before, you boil the ocean 1 degree at a time. And that's kind of how migraine can slowly take over your life. One little inconvenience or symptom at a time until you don't realize how dysfunctioning you really are.
Oh, totally. And I think that kept me from exercising, from getting into a place where I wanted to be. So I said, what's the worst that will happen to me? I'll have a migraine attack. That's bad, but I have a migraine attack anyway. So I'm going to try this. I'm going to work with people. And it was rough getting off of the older medications, getting onto the newer ones. It wasn't an immediate switch. And I was doing all the right things. I was losing weight. I lost a ton of weight healthily. I was exercising. I was walking. I was doing all the things that we hear are the right things to do. And I still was feeling crappy. But at some point, it started to go in the other direction where I was having better days. I was having more days that were better than that were worse. And it was the inverse prior to that. So I had to give myself the space and time to fail and to try different things, try different types of movement, find what works for me. I realized I probably will never be a marathon runner.
You and me both.
I realized that I'm not going to be an ultra marathon runner or run a marathon ever. But I got into weightlifting and that helped me. And there haven't been that many studies about strength training and migraine, but I think that that's something that is an emerging topic that we'll see more of in the future, as we, learn about exercise and migraine. So I'm able to do things that I never thought 10 years ago I could do. And in large part, it's because I'm better managed with my migraine.
That is great news. Joe, I want to thank you so much for today's interview. We've covered a wide array of topics. Where can we learn more about what you're doing or follow your work?
Oh, in a couple of places. First, my organization is Global Healthy Living Foundation, and that's ghlf.org. And I also host a podcast about headache and migraine called Talking Head Pain. That's on Apple, Spotify, and you can also find that at talkingheadpain.org.
Are there any resources you'd like to recommend to our audience?
On talkingheadpain.org, there's a resource library. There are audio guides around migraine disease. There are also some episodes particularly focused on the LGBTQ community, both from the research perspective and patient and provider perspective. So definitely check out the catalog at talkingheadpain.org.
Well, today we have discussed how the LGBTQ community has extra obstacles when receiving medical care and diagnosing migraine. We can all agree that the first step forward is acceptance and kindness, and patients should reach out to their local LGBTQ communities for resources on finding practitioners and friendly physicians in their area. Thank you again, Joe.
And thank you, Lisa, and the Migraine World Summit for continuing this important dialogue. I want everyone to leave this interview knowing that you're loved, that someone out there loves you, that you're important, that you're valued, and that you deserve respect.